It's an ill mind that's still time build and refine. Still getting mine in the 9 at 9 build and refine, build and refine, build and refine. Still getting mine in the 9 at 9 build and refine. Still getting mine. Geometric 9 at 9.
Sean J. 9 at 9.
Stylus Chris
9 at 9. DJ has 1 9 at 9.
Don't touch the dial, you heard.
What's up, everybody? DJ Geometrics here, and it's time once again for the 9 at 9 DJ podcast, the only show with 9 DJs on a roundtable panel discussing today's DJ topics. This show is brought to you by Beat Refinery, DJ School at Bacharach. Learn how to mix, scratch, and make music by visiting beatrefinery.com. We have school locations all around the U.S. This is episode number 17. The pandemic is still going on. Still no cure in sight. Maybe we'll see one next year. Who knows? Some DJs have gone back to work. Some haven't. Some have taken to Twitch. Some are looking to switch careers. But we can definitely say this pandemic has stressed the hell out of everybody. And we've actually had little discussions here and there about mental health within the DJ community in our past episodes. So tonight, we're going to dive deep into it. So, but first, let me introduce the rest of my crew, my co-hosts. We got DJ As One.
Welcome back to the show, guys.
That was the best one.
I like that. By the way, guys, congratulations to As One for making the DMC US Finals for the 8th time. And I believe, Art, they're going to announce the top three in a couple days, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So hopefully, man.
US. I was fortunate enough to place top three in the Elim round to score third highest. So that was, I was pretty stoked to score under iEmerge. So,
yeah, that's the big surprise. iEmerge is back.
Ooh, yeah.
Amazing. He's like, he's still probably the greatest battle DJ of all time.
Win or lose, it's going to be good for my resume, you know. So,
but that's another
discussion. My G cred will.
But that's another discussion for another day. Well, let's continue on. Next up, we have Sean J.
What up?
And finally, I'm going to pass off the mic off to Stylus Chris. Take it away.
What's up, everybody? Thank you all for being here tonight. This is an episode long in the making. We have some of our dearest DJ friends, Beat Refinery alumni, and we've got a couple of really special guests joining us as well. So without further ado, we'll start to introduce them in alphabetical order, as we always like to. Our first guest has been, as I was saying, one of our alumni. She was in our very first Beat Refinery class, the inaugural class, and quickly became like one of our crew that just went to all the shows with us, DJed with us, fast learner, trained violist. She is one of these DJs that I have personally put a lot of my trust and faith in, and am happy to call her colleague and partner. And she DJs DC United with me. She DJs the Washington Nationals with me. She's also someone that I've got to learn about her personal life and how these type of issues are important to her, as well as social justice and change. She's even been arrested by the Secret Service for protesting. She's pretty badass. And she definitely believes actions speak louder than words and lives it. And let's give it up for our girl, Alchemist.
Welcome back, fam.
Thanks for
Yeah, I'm so glad that we were able to connect tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's always great to be able to have, yes, the homies on the show. Especially after last week's episode, last 2 weeks of episodes, where we had some of the dopest female DJs sharing stories. It's great to have one of our own special DJs back with us. So thank you.
Thank you.
Our next guest is a local DC DJ for 20 years. He's thrown legendary parties, one back in the day called Soul Report. In recent years, he's begun leading patient experience for a new firm focused on mental health through the trials of psychedelic therapies. This work, and with his colleagues, they're looking after and involving with which involves helping people heal in a therapeutic setting that involves music and trials approved by the FDA for appraisal using MDMA and psilocybin therapies. The therapies target depression, addiction, and anxiety. And these are obviously some of our society's most vexing social issues. Please welcome my friend, Chris Bear.
Chris Bear, how's it going?
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Chris.
Welcome. Hey, man, I'm really stoked you could be here with us, with your background, and kind of share some light and just be what I've been fortunate enough to get to know from you and help keep me on a, you know, from jumping cliffs. So thank you very much.
It goes both ways, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate that, man. Our next guest is someone that I've admired for a long time. He made a mixtape called Make an Appointment. It's been in my Serato for like 10 years. Anybody that I know loves music and loves all kinds of, like, I can't believe I'm hearing this music. Always appreciated that mix. He's a brand strategy director at an ad agency that shall remain unnamed and holds a PhD in philosophy. He's spent about 15 years DJing 3 to 5 times a week all around the Pacific Northwest, specifically in Portland and Seattle. Has a reputation as an avid edit maker and remixer of songs that most DJs probably aren't going to play. I love that he says that. That's for any DJ that's scared to play, like that doesn't have that their own self confidence to play, more or less, is what he really means. Because he's an incredible contributor to my personal music library, especially years ago when there wasn't such an easy outlet to get music as a DJ. To cop a folder of this guy's edits was like seriously hitting gold. He's also Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, kettlebell strength and conditioning coach, former competitive amateur boxer, aspiring Wim Hof method trainer, and a longtime college professor. Please give it up for Doc Adam!
Yeah. Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Man, it's definitely an honor to have you here, and thank you for joining us, man. Really appreciate
it. Absolutely. Thanks for asking.
For all you guys that don't know, you definitely, I highly suggest following Doc Adam on Instagram and Twitter. I get my exercise tips. I get my some nice mental breaks and mental thoughts from him. Great follow. Definitely check him out. Our next guest definitely doesn't need an introduction. He's basically the honorary member that sat in on probably more shows than any other guest. We have a special place for this guy. He's a scratch mechanic. Shout out to the Scratch Mechanics XL.
Well, wicked.
Baltimore. He has legendary Night Brunch.
Stand up.
And he's one of my favorite scratch DJs for sure, and also one of my favorite party DJs, all in one person, which I think pound for pound, he's one of my favorite DJs for sure, musically, technically, and just bringing that just good energy and joy to the music. And it's always in his persona that way. It's in his photography that he's doing. We're going to talk about. Let's give it up for our brother DJ Impulse.
Yeah. Impulse Power. Power.
Thanks for having me.
So glad to have you back, man. You know, it's certainly you know, one of the reasons we even were doing this topic today on mental health is because of you and the first episode that we ever did, really opening up in a way that I think touched a lot of people. It made a lot of people, after, you know, that podcast and a lot of people that watched it, I saw a lot more people opening up and, you know, feeling that they could also, you know, say what's on their mind or say what's on their heart. And that was really, really powerful. And I think a lot of people were inspired by that. So thank you for being with us, man.
Thank you for leading by example, man.
Yes. And our last guest, also a dear friend of ours and has been on the show. I think this is maybe his third time being on the show. And I think he's even been on with Impulse before. And these guys were vibing out about these serious conversations, and so it only made sense to have him back. His resume as a DJ is pretty astounding in itself, and how much he's traveled. He's a Red Bull 3-Style past US finalist. He's DJed in Shanghai, LA, Miami, Pittsburgh, DC. He comes and hangs out with us at Heist. He's been another one of these DJs that you can throw him in any kind of setting and he's going to rock the crowd, which I think is really difficult to do in other cities and this time in age where the music styles can go in any direction. He quickly can adapt, and I've seen him, and he also gets around town and figures out the best restaurants before you even knew what was in your own town half the time. And, you know, of course, one of his claim to fame is his arch enemy is Michael Jordan. But he's also followed on Twitter by Obama, which
I was going to say, still got that Obama sign.
And we're going to ride that one until the wheels fall off. Let's give it up for our brother, DJ Koo.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me back.
Man, so glad that you were able to join us, man. And, you know, just want to start quickly with the three of you that have been on and since the last episode. What have you been... How have you been doing? Are you gigging? What's kind of your situation and how are you?
I'm honestly in a much better mental state than I have been during this pandemic. Florida is wilding the fuck out and everything is 100% back open down here. And Florida, man, to the balls to the wall, man. Like, it's wild.
Does that... How has that affected you personally or professionally? Are you playing out a lot or at all? I know you're playing at least one night that I've seen you play.
Yeah, I'm definitely like pretty much back to work.
Wow.
There's a side of it that's like it's weird. Like a part of me is being fulfilled again and I'm happy to be back and having like a sense of purpose fulfilled and just being back to work and being around people again is done wonders for me. But then there's the other side of me that's just like fucking like panic mode. Like, you know, like this shit is not over. But you know, a lot of us had kind of had to like face like a pretty hard decision when it came time to decide to go back to work or not. And it was for me, outside of the mental issue, it was also a like financial issue. Like, you know, the unemployment in Florida, the unemployment system is absolutely terrible. A lot of people's unemployment have run out. There's like basically no stimulus in sight at the moment. So a lot of us just don't have a choice, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think that's what it's always been a theme is we got to make sure that we're not judging others that are getting back to work when, you know, so many people are out working in so many different restaurants or even hospitals, grocery stores. People are out working if they have to work, and how can a DJ be any different really to that point? As long as you're adhering to the guidelines of where you live, it's, you know, you can't knock a guy for going out and working. And I think
I've always said that like from the beginning too, like everyone's situation is different and it's so easy to point the finger and say like, oh, you're wrong for doing this or whatever, but you know, it's your back's up against the wall, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah, indeed. Impulse, you've been, I guess, taking a little step back from DJing, and, you know, a lot of us are familiar with your photography and what's going, you know, on all the time on your Instagram and different clients that you're working with. So where are things for you right now in terms of since we last caught up to you?
Yeah, I think I've played maybe, I've done two gigs since the pandemic. And then I just kind of, I was lucky enough to have this other art form in my pocket that I could kind of do. And yeah, it's been great. I mean, I'm working with Hyatt, the hotel chain, and working with them as a client, doing a lot of architectural photography and stuff like that. I mean, I would have never, and food, a ton of food, of course. So, but yeah, it's been pretty awesome.
And how's your like kind of mental state from, you know, from just kind of finding this new, you know, career path, really? I mean,
I will honestly say that my mental health and my where I am right now has been the best that it's been in, I can't tell you how long, at least 10 years, to be honest with you. Because I was already kind of, you know, wondering if this is even what I wanted to do DJ wise, or at least in the club setting. Mm-hmm. And then with all of the travel, you know, it was really wearing me down. I love traveling. I love seeing my friends. I love the energy, but at what cost, you know? So that was kind of that's kind of where I was. So I feel great now. Am I making as much money? Probably not, but you know, it's not worth my sanity.
But is your insanity, you know, are you feeling better these days because you're not thinking about DJing?
Yes. Yes. I mean, going back to
like the whole stress of the DJ business and like, you know, just
stress, the stress of all of it and like the performance anxiety and. It didn't matter where I was. Like, it didn't matter if I was in my home city or, you know, across the world. Like, it just didn't matter. It was always, I always had this like crazy anxiety. It went away when I started playing, but it was the buildup to that.
Oh, yeah.
There were like two or three things that have changed since then. Like, what are the two or three things that have really changed for your life and your behavior that have made a difference?
I would say my sleep, number one.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
My sleep, number one. I'm in bed by 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night.
Whoa.
If I don't fall asleep until two, that's fine. But I'm up, I'm like relaxing. You know, I'm out, I'm exercising, I'm eating better. You know, it's a lot of things, you know, and it's just kind of neutralized how I feel.
Hey, Art, when was the last time you went to sleep at 10 o'clock?
You know, I don't know. I was supposed to do something like that last weekend when I was taking care of my grandmother. But that didn't happen. Yeah. So I don't know. I can't remember. Yeah. But no, you know, to that point though, you know, I do enjoy rest so much more now in at my age than I did, especially in my 20s. I almost kind of like told people I didn't need it. I was like, dude, 3-4 hours of sleep, that's all you need. And sure, that's all you need.
Getting the rest is amazing.
Yeah, and you need to fix that feedback, Art, too. So
I mean,
put your headphones on, man.
Kim, you, a lot of people know that you've been in DC for a long time, but and I think they know that you're from the Washington State area. But you know, since the pandemic, you've been there, and even before we got on the show, you're kind of talking about that you're not really in any rush to make your way back over here. And even, you know, through our business relationship, and I've been talking to you with gigs and things, you're like, you know, nah, I'm cool on anything for now. Like postponements late into the year, okay, I'll take them, but don't ask for anything now. So, I mean, you obviously have where you're comfortable or where you, what you want to do. How are you just doing? Not, I'm assuming not DJing at all. Like what have you been doing? How have you been?
Well, yes, I've been essentially unemployed, which is actually a lot better than it sounds. In Washington, we're saving like a lot more money here. So, sure. And Nick still has his job. So I've been kind of privileged that he can kind of support us and pay the rent and get the bills paid. And we're just kind of enjoying being near family. And we're like renting this house on this like huge piece of land. So we're trying to just kind of figure out how we can live a simple lifestyle. Cause I think personally that brings me a lot more joy. So growing a lot of our own food and just, you know, trying to cut costs rather than worry about, you know, making up that.
Trying to live that minimalist life.
Oh yeah, that's great. Kim,
last time this year, did you think that you would be where you're at now? I mean, like, you know, where was your mind state?
I don't even know. Washington? I mean, we're getting close to my birthday, so it was probably in a weird place.
I get it.
But yeah, I mean, because we're close to family, like I think essentially every single member of my family and Nick's family are essentially high risk. So I just figure, you know, it's not, for me, it's not worth it to risk bringing something back. So like I said, we're just living the simple life. I'm getting a lot more sleep too. Not going to bed at 10, but getting a lot more sleep. Yeah. And just, it's nice being kind of in nature again. I think that's like a really, really important thing for humans personally.
Yeah. I think we're all trying to find the things that make us feel at ease or less stressed, or, you know, nature is something that, especially if, for those of us that live in the city, you take for granted. And getting into some nature is always a blessing. Definitely changes your perception.
100%.
I just saw a stat today that
real quick, you know, I saw Koo, like some of his Facebook posts. He was naturing it up, like,
yeah.
Where was it?
It did wonders for me, man. Like, she's spot on. I took like a week and just completely unplugged and rented a cabin in Georgia, and
awesome.
It was amazing. I came back like super refreshed. Just, yeah, definitely. I agree with that 100% for sure. No, I went with like family. I had my sister drove even down from better. DC.
Yeah.
That's and then what you need. Me and my wife came up from Florida and kind of met halfway in like northern Georgia.
Nice.
What did you notice when you were out there, Koo, that like what made the difference for you?
Personally, being around family again was probably the most, like, because I'm back to work, I don't see my mom as often, because she's older, obviously, and my sister lives in DC, and none of us are super comfortable with traveling on planes yet, so just being able to be around them and not having to stress about DJing or work for a week was just amazing, and it was just amazing. Just being able to hike and cook all of our meals every single day and just relax and unplug. It was amazing. I brought my turntables there, and it was just like getting back to like what I personally love about DJing and you know, and not have to worry about the club scene and just, I don't know. It was just being able to escape was
therapy. Doing stuff for the soul. There.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's why Chris, man, like I've gone camping 4 times.
Yeah. Yeah. Gio's been getting his nature. And also, you know, getting some of the coolest footage of our galaxy. It's been
I've gotten into astrophotography.
Yeah.
And Impulse, he's right on your tail with that.
Enough. In the illest whip too, man. Come on, bro.
Yeah. I was seeing today though something that kind of startled me, but it was a statistic from they compiled from all these different health institutions and phone calls for like suicide and people calling with nervous breakdown, just these syndromes of anxiety attacks is up 631% this year.
Damn.
And
shit.
You hear something like that and you're just like, it just floors you. And, you know, I think we all kind of have seen things building prior to even coronavirus of social just unrest. And this has just been a boiler and just like, just lit the fuse. And, you know, we're talking this episode about mental health. I would like to welcome Doc Adam to give us, you know, a little bit, you know, mental health basically about psychology and how does your training as a philosopher apply in what you're doing now and just how you not only with for yourself but how you help people?
It's a great question. I think generally when, you know, when I tell people that I have a PhD in philosophy, you get this sort of you get bizarre reactions because nobody really knows what that means. There's this sort of vague sense, and you know, unless somebody actually took philosophy classes in college, people are like, I have no idea what that means. And you may have somebody be like, well, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, doesn't make a sound, like, you know, that sort of shit, like jokes my dad would make.
Shit in the woods.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. And look, the fact of the matter is, when somebody studies philosophy in an academic context, it can mean like the broadest range of conceivable things you can imagine. Because like philosophy is not a single-minded discipline, right? You can be like a philosophy. You can study the philosophy of physics. You can study the philosophy of biology. You can study the philosophy of mathematics. You can study and that's why when you get a PhD, what you're getting is a doctor of the philosophy of whatever. Right. So when you get a PhD in chemistry, you're a doctor of the philosophy of chemistry, right? Like the idea is that you understand the why, not just the what of the thing. Mm. Right. So that you don't just do the chemistry. You understand why everything works the way that it does at a fundamental level when you have a PhD in chemistry or whatever. Anyways, blah, blah, blah. But for me, like what I studied in particular in philosophy was what is called phenomenology. And I won't go super, super deep into what that, the all the ins and outs of what that is. It's basically an intellectual strain that started in like the early 20th century, late 19th century in Austria and Germany. But the basics of it is essentially trying to get back to the immediacy of human experience, which may seem really obvious and easy, but the idea is that the majority of our experience in the world is fundamentally mediated, right? And it's mediated through social constructs, through ideological narratives, through different filters that we've taken on over the course of our lives. Oftentimes, even individual ones like interests, you know. So when an example I always used to give to people to understand what I meant when I would say this is, you know, like when I'm talking about this is to say, experience, generally speaking, when we think about it, as being a two-step process, right? Like information comes into my sensory apparatus and then I think about it and I interpret it and I decide how I feel about it. And then I have my conclusion, you know, or whatever. But the fact of the matter is like experience is not two steps. It's one step, right? The way that we encounter the world, it's already interpreted for us. The easy example I have here is and I actually know how this would work with this room of people, I think, is if I walk into someone's house and there's a bookshelf on one side of the room and a record shelf on the other side of the room, right? Some people are going to walk in there and say, the most interesting thing in this room are the records. Other people are going to walk in and say, the most interesting thing in this room are the books, right? The thing is that what's missing from both of those sentences is to me, right, at the end, Right. Because there's nothing in that room that is anything any more interesting than anything else in that room from an objective perspective. What there is what you have chosen to invest with meaning, right, is the thing that grabs your attention when you enter. Right. So we in essence are perpetually constituting our own reality. A lot of the ways in which that reality is constituted has nothing to do with choices that I've made. They're a result of the culture I was born in. They're a result of the language that I speak, right? There are, you know, all of these other things that inform the way that I interpret the world. This is the reason I'm going on about this is I think of philosophy as essentially being, a form of therapy, at least the way that I understand it, because what I'm doing when I was teaching phenomenology as a professor, when I talk to friends of mine now about these sorts of things, oftentimes what I'm trying to do is get them to sort of take apart, you know, what are the assumptions, the commitments that they've made sort of unconsciously in their own mind that are determining their experience of the world, especially if that experience is making them unhappy, right? If they're feeling miserable, how much of that is a result of commitments and choices that they've made or things that maybe they haven't even chosen to make? You know, like the easy example I have of that is like when you grow up in the United States, you know, we are a culture of liberalism. Right. And liberalism doesn't mean like conservative liberal in the standard political sense. It's liberalism as a political theory is the idea that societies are an aggregate of pre-existing discrete individuals. Right. So all of us exist independently as little beings wandering around, and then we sort of got together and formed a society. Right. So the individual precedes the social. Right. That's what liberalism is as a political theory. So everyone in America is a liberal. Like you'll never meet one who isn't. I mean, you can, but it's rare. That is an assumption that we have that enables us to sort of have this like pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality. It causes us to blame ourselves for feeling lonely or isolated. You know, like, oh, I'm weak, I can't just get my shit together, blah, 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 blah. But all of that is based on an assumption about what it means to be human that isn't grounded in anything in particular, right? The happiest communities on the planet are ones that are not liberal in that sense, right? They're you can call them what you want, communitarian, whatever, but the idea that like the community precedes the individual, right? Like that the community comes first. I am an epiphenomena of that community, right? So when I start poking around in there and asking those questions, oftentimes what I see myself as doing is essentially a form of therapy, right? Sometimes it's not the most fun therapy, right? But it's, you know, it's poking and prodding to try to get you to see what are these assumptions that I have about how the world works or how I work that I've never really thought about. And how can that change the way I experience things if I actually start to dig into them and investigate them more deeply? You know, I can go on about this for days, but I'll shut up at that point in time.
I got a quick question.
Yes.
Obviously, you've got a really good grasp on a lot of really big, big theory concepts.
Told you his Twitter takes a while to read, didn't I?
No, man. This is fascinating. I feel like an idiot, but I like learning from people smarter than me. So I want to ask
I'm ready to sign up for class.
Sign me up. I want to ask an easy transitional question.
Yeah.
Does understanding philosophy and psychology help you as a DJ on the dance floor in picking the next song to like move the room?
Yes, it does, but in ways that I think are relatively simple. You know, ironically, the first piece of advice I ever really got when I was learning how to DJ, I started DJing in 1998. In my dorm room, freshman year of college, University of Michigan. I'd been a drummer. I still play the drums, but I was a drummer before that, playing in punk rock bands and hardcore bands, and I continued to do that for years and years afterwards. Nice. But freshman year in the dorms, can't bring a drum kit, you know. So I was like stressed out. I was like, "What the fuck am I gonna do for music?" And I was like, scratching is a lot like drumming, and so I bought a turntable and whatever. Like, and I started meeting some people. And kind of somehow or another, because I was just annoying and I think just like pestered people constantly, became a bit of a mentee to a guy, a DJ in Ann Arbor in Detroit named DJ Jammin' Jay. His name is Jameel. He's been DJing since like 1983, something like that. And he's still playing today. And he's way the fuck better than I've ever been. But he he told me the, because he plays the craziest stuff, because he started DJing when, like, if you ask him, Jamil, what kind of DJ are you? He says, oh, I'm a hip hop DJ. But to him,
the roots in the 80s, absolutely.
Yeah, but to him, that's a style. It's a style of DJing. It's not a genre, right?
Yeah.
It's about how you play. It's not about what you play.
Yeah.
And so he grew up listening to, you know, Electrifying Mojo, you know, Jeff Mills, you know, when he was the Wizard, you know, doing all of that shit live on the radio. That was like his inspiration to learn how to DJ. And so he would always tell me, like, your job as a DJ is to try to introduce people to cool shit, right? Thing one, the way that you introduce people to cool shit, this is where the philosophy starts, is making sandwiches, right? And I was like, what do you mean making sandwiches? He said, well, you got to give them something. You give them something they like, some, you know, a little bread on the one side, you know, a little mayo on it, whatever. You put something in the middle that they don't know yet, but feels familiar enough to the thing that they liked on the other side. And then on the other side, you throw something else that you know they like. Right. And if you make that sandwich enough times in the same club, in the same room, to the same people, that middle piece of the sandwich can eventually become one of the pieces of bread. Right. And then that can become your mechanism to introduce people the new shit. Right. The what he was sort of getting on there, if people are familiar with this, there's a really famous designer, graphic designer and more named Raymond Loewy, who designed like everything under the fucking sun, like the US Postal Service logo, Air Force One, the subway maps for New York. Like, he's the godfather of design in the United States. And he came up with this principle, design principle. It's usually referred to as the Maya principle, Maya being an acronym for most advanced yet acceptable. And what he meant when he said that is essentially your job as a designer, songwriter, DJ, whatever, is to push yourself to the most advanced. When he says advanced, he means the most, you know, the most cutting edge place you can, while still being within the domain of acceptability, right? There's an edge you can tip over where that shit's too weird or it's too soon, you know, like you've crossed the line where you went too far, and the greatest designers, greatest hit makers, greatest whatever, greatest DJs are people who ride that line of the Maya principle at all times. The people who you're never, and the best ones are going to tip over it occasionally. You know, and you're going to be like, well, why did you do that? That was very weird. But like that, ironically, thinking about DJing through that filter is very much Jamil telling me to make sandwiches. It was the same thing. You know, it's like you're finding the acceptable thing. You're finding a way to push it a little bit further, right? But to do that, you need to assess your audience, right? Here's some non-philosophy for you, the way that I used to DJ. And I'm sure Brian has heard me say this before, but the Doc Adam method for DJing, walk into a room, stare at the crowd, do an ocular pat down, figure out the median age in the room, right? So the median age in this room is 26 years old. What year was a 26 year old in middle school, right? So you figure out the median age, you figure out what year that median age group of people was in middle school, and every third song you play is from when that group was in middle school. And you will have a slap and set at all times.
I've never heard somebody succinctly explain that idea, but I've been doing that for years. I never didn't know there was an easy way to explain it. That's crazy.
Like a lot of my wedding clients, I always ask them, like, what year did you graduate high school?
Yeah, that's my go-to.
Them and their friends are like always like going back to like their high school, college days as far as like songs, but.
Yeah, well, I mean that.
Instead of giving mayo, you give them truffle garlic aioli.
A lot of that's just like a feeling to a lot of DJs, and that was like you said, that was a great explanation of
this goes beyond that, in the sense that every generation thinks their music was the best music. And it's because it's you shaping that individual's life is being shaped, and that's the soundtrack to it, and that's their comfort zone, and that's why they don't want to, you know, that's why they still want to listen to 80s new wave, and even anything that you would give them now that's almost sounds exactly the same. They're like, I'm not feeling that, you know, because they'd rather have.
I only listen to yacht rock.
Brings them, and you know, I mean, want
to
bring.
Much only listen to the yacht rock. can I say one thing about that, Chris? Before you move on,
yeah.
What's interesting, if you think, you know, you think about that, why do people get stuck in that era, right? And I mean, I'd actually be interested to hear what Chris has to say about this if we get further along down the line. But you know, when we're teenagers, you know, our prefrontal cortex, like the rational part of our brain that really drives, you know, that drives the motors of, you know, the accountants that are handling the boring labor of checking the boxes throughout the course of your life, whether those are actual physical accountants or other forms of accountants. That's just not formed yet, right? Our prefrontal cortex isn't fully formed until we're, you know, 23, 24, depending on who you ask. So when you're younger, you're existing in a state that is significantly more, you know, affective, much more emotional, right? And memories and emotion, right, are that's the reason why trauma sticks with us so hard, right, is because you know, things that strike us as intensely emotional are the moments that are most likely to form, you know, long-term memories in our minds. So when you're a teenager, like, all of your experiences are so much more intensely emotional because you don't have the same kind of rational faculties at your disposal, or you can't call them up as easily as somebody who's like 27 or 45 can, right? So you get those memories just get like, you know, the intensity of the emotion that's attached to the first time I heard Energy by Operation Ivy, you know, when I was 13 or 14 years old, like, nothing I ever hear will ever compare to that, you know, or it was like the earth cracked open, you know what I mean? And
because your brain is forming around hearing that for the first time.
Exactly. Yeah. Operation Ivy is amazing. But if I heard that for the first time now, would I have that same reaction? Absolutely not. You know, so like I'm always sympathetic to people who are like, who kind of get, you know, stuck or whatever in that space, because I'm like, that's just kind of how we're built, you know. Like it's, you know, also we're, you know, evolutionarily, but most of us should probably already be dead by now, you know what I mean? We should have already like made our babies and dropped off, you know, at like 38 or whatever, you know, like we've been around for too long.
I'm just at 35, so hopefully not that soon, but
At the same time that the, you know, the music shapes somebody and you give them a pass, we also have to remember to give like the youth a pass, because it's like, I think in the same sense, when all of us old farts are like, man, this new music sucks. Music's just not what it used to be. It's not that way to most of the kids, you know, they're loving it the same way we loved it. And, you know, and you were touching on it, Adam, and why I want to kick it over to Chris Baer, because he's like, got the, you know, when it comes to trauma and PTSD and using music and medicine, you know, how do you feel about, you know, what you're doing and how music is, how are you using music as therapy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And there's so many different ways to like talk about some of the things that have just been said. I mean, we are meaning-making machines. That's what we do. Music is one of the most powerful mechanisms we have to around which we make meaning, right? We share it through linguistics, through rhythm, through harmonies and melodies, and all those things cause an emotional landscape for us around which we build our lives. And I know myself personally, like I keep music, and I know actually all of you all probably do too, like in certain folders, because when you want to go back to a certain memory, you just play that music and just all comes to life. In the therapeutic setting, and at least in the research trials, there's a fellow I work with who's a researcher, and he said that, you know, he's overheard that music is the hidden therapist in a sense in these settings. Where generally the idea is that whether it's through trauma or through depression, anxiety, addiction, or PTSD, particular flavor of all these difficult scenarios, the mind has a propensity to want to heal itself. So it's not necessarily sometimes talking things out with another individual and asking some provocative questions is the way to go for a lot of people conventionally. The domain in which I'm working now is, it feels like magic to Western medicine, but let's be really honest about it, that it's been around for thousands of years. I mean, it's so classic America, but like, look what we've just discovered. Like, no, it wasn't. Get over ourselves, right? But we are working with the society really hard to try to figure out a way to integrate some of these new therapies in so that we can actually assimilate them. And Adam's comment about liberalism, I mean, I think, you know, if you think about us, how individualistic our narratives are, right? All of us are going after it. You can do it, Nike. Just do it, right? It's all about you and what you're achieving. Well, when it's all about you, it's also really freaking lonely, right? Because mm-hmm. we're not community-based as much as a lot of other societies are. We've really crafted ourselves around a narrative. So every now and then, at certain points in our lives, and it happens a lot, you see it a lot with men in their midlife, and I think women, generically speaking, forgive me if I'm generalizing too much, but have a little bit more emotional connection with their friends than sometimes men do, right? We're kind of suck at that at times. We find ourselves at like a dead end. We're like, holy crap, my stories aren't working anymore. I'm lonely as hell. What the fuck? What happened? Which is why these kinds of conversations are so important, because unless we surface it, we really don't have a chance to move it from what we would say in the therapeutic setting, from subject to object. And by the way, I'm not a therapist and I'm not a researcher. I'm a UX designer, but I pay attention to human development. And so when I say subject to object, if you've got something inside of you that is actually fiddling with your own operating system and you don't even know what's going on, you don't notice it, there's not a lot you can do to change it. It's the moment that we actually are able to pull it out and observe it. And then we have choice. Choices may not be easy, but at least we have choice. And we may have to go through hell to get through that choice, but we can move through it. And that, to me, is the obligation we have to one another, is to help ourselves and one another with those choices. And there's a philosopher, Ram Dass, who said, and one of my favorite things is, after all, we are all just walking each other home. And I mean, that to me, that really gets me right there, which is like, at our best, we are all helping each other find our way home. And so that's sort of my thought. I'll pause there and just sort of see what comes up for other folks.
I love that thought. Actually, so to bring it to the rest of the DJs, I think that what you said is really, really prominent there, Chris, that having a space to have these kind of conversations and just share amongst ourselves and share openly for anybody watching the show. I think it's important to kind of share our experiences. So I wanted to throw it back to Alchemist, Coup, and Impulse. We were talking amongst ourselves and planning this episode. There's a list of things that I'm sure we couldn't hit nearly everything on it that are like particularly triggering while you're in the DJ booth at the club. And at Doc Adam, of course, feel free to chime in on this too. But I want to see what you guys have experienced, I guess, in previous to 2020 and pandemic shutting everything down, or even like right now, are there any particularly like triggering moments that come up for you? I'd say an example for my life would be when you go to a venue and then you have a conversation with the music director. We want this kind of sound. We have this kind of demographic, and whoever was the person that booked you is not the person who's there every week. So it was the exact opposite is what you know you're supposed to do. But then you have this conflict between you and the person doing the booking about what you should play, how to do your job. And that kind of stirs up the bee's nest. So I know when it comes to things like that, that really hits me in the chest. But how about for everybody else there? Any other like particularly triggering moments that feel impactful for you as an individual or just DJs overall?
That was a loaded question.
Take a stab, Koo.
I think one thing that's kind of happened this year in terms of all the social injustice that's been happening. I remember I made a status about this right around George Floyd, where it was something along the lines of like, if you're telling me to change the music because you don't like a specific crowd in here, like, I'm just not fucking with you anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's one thing to, like you said in the beginning, like before you get to a gig and they're like, listen, we want you to kind of jump all around, you know, that's okay. I get that, you know, but if you're like going out of your way though, because unfortunately this has happened countless amounts of times, like all across the United States, all over, you know what I'm saying? Just, it's just racist, like, you know, and that kind of stuff definitely like triggers me if I hear about it still happening nowadays, because I think a lot of people kind of had an awakening this year, and I think it's a great thing. But that in specific kind of reminds me of that. Yeah, for sure.
Cam, how about you?
I mean, I feel like my perspective is going to be a little bit different. I think as a female, like, the nightlife scene in general is just very triggering. It's a very toxic scene. And I could go on and on about, like, just walking in and having people just not believe who you are or think that they have the right to put their hands on you or, you know, sexually molest you in the DJ booth, things like that. But that's also just, you know, true to just life as a woman. And I kind of agree with everything that Koo was saying too, like just all the bullshit, right, is like pretty triggering. To kind of come back to what was being said earlier, I was reminded of this talk that I went to like a couple years ago. And it was like a neuroscience meets music meets like binary code kind of conference. Yeah, it was super dope. And anyway, the guy that was talking about how, like, if you think about all the different parts of our brain as having kind of like these walls or these barriers kind of separating the different sections, he said the only thing that actually lowers those barriers and allows all the different parts of our brain to communicate with each other is music. And I thought that was really fucking cool.
It's the string that's bringing all of us together anyway, is DJs to do that for a living. All right, Impulse, last man standing. Anything that stands out for you? I know you've got a list of them, and you've told me a particularly interesting story about being in an airport after a long run of gigs. I don't know if that's something you want to share today, but anything that comes to mind, go for it.
Which one was that?
You told me that you had flown around a whole bunch of different places around the States, and then by the time you got back to the airport, you were like, I need to like sit down and just have some water before I could even go home, just like being completely drained out from all the travel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that shit is tough. I mean, Coop knows. but it's I mean, as far as can you guys hear me?
Yeah, cool? Yep.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. So think, and going back to what Koo said, I'm very curious, once we get back to some sort of normalcy, if that'll ever come up again, like, hey, chill out on this kind of music, like, you know what I'm saying, because of everything that's happened, and I hope it's genuine, you know, when we get back to it. And as far as things that are just triggering, it's what Kim said. It's toxic. It's toxic in my mind for me. The more time I spend away from it, the more I realize how horrible it is. You know, it's fun when you're in the moment, but it's deteriorating. Like, it's, you drink too much, you eat like shit, you don't sleep, like, you know, it's all of these things wrapped in the one. But you know, we do it because we fiend off of getting that energy from the crowd. You know, it's like it is a drug. You know, at the end of the day, it's an addiction. It's an addiction, and that's why a lot of musicians, DJs, I feel, are going through this, because now we've had all this time, you're not getting that drug, and you're not playing on Twitch or live, that's not the same.
That's a whole different animal. Yeah.
No, that's
seeing a chat box full of people versus seeing people actually dancing is a whole nother animal. Yeah.
Totally different. That's CBD. What we were doing before is THC. You know what I mean? Like,
I think that's a different issue with the guys on Twitch. You know, most of them are very, you know, are extroverts. They're probably just, you know, like want some connection, want to talk to people every day, that sort of thing, you know?
Totally.
I remember my first gig back, like I said the same thing to myself. I was like, wow, I didn't even realize how much I missed this. Like being able to physically see people's reactions and see you kind of steer their night, you know, like it's props to the guys on Twitch, but it just wasn't like, it wasn't the same for me.
No. And that's why I picked up and did something else. Like I needed to get it out. And it wasn't the live thing. I mean, I had a strong run, and at the end of the day, it just wasn't fulfilling to me. But what I will say is, I've talked to so many people, and I've had tons of messages where what I was doing like completely made their day. Like it was a thing for people to
right.
stop everything that they were doing on a Friday night,
checking on the whole family.
We're going to check in on the live stream. And it was a thing. So, you know, I was torn with that, but you know, for me, it just wasn't, I was giving, and I wasn't doing mm-hmm. anything to make myself happy, because at the, you know, at the beginning we went from 100 miles an hour to -5. So it was, we all felt like we had to keep chugging along. And, some people stuck with it. Some people found other outlets to get their creativity out, or just stopped altogether and, took time for themselves to, you know, mentally heal and physically heal and whatever else. So
that's what we were talking about, Kool, last time you were here. We were talking about like creative outlets, because we're all
yeah.
people at the end of the day. And I think with you, Impulse, that's what you found, you know, with the photography. And such, it's like you're getting your creative energy out, you know, out in the like, world.
At the end of the day, is you just didn't sign up to make digital sandwiches. you were like, I can make the shit out of some sandwiches live, bro, but like the digital sandwiches, I need to get my hands on it.
Nah.
That only makes sense if you watched like everything prior to what I just said. So
yeah, it's really interesting for me, because I was, you know, I largely started pulling back from DJing around 2016. I still DJ. Well, again, like I said, much these days, but for obvious reasons. But I was still playing out. But when I started working full time in strategy, I started pulling away, just because I was like, well, I don't need to play four nights a week or five nights a week anymore to pay my bills. So like, I'm just going to start taking gigs that are more fun. And once I got a little bit of critical distance from the previous, you know, 15, 16 years of DJing, so much shit started unlocking in my head about, you know, all of the, like the fucked up relationship that I had to the entire process and the entire experience. Cause, you know, coming from like the punk rock scene, the hardcore scene, as my musical background, like I said, I played in hardcore bands, like toured all over the world a bunch of times doing that, but like not in any kind of glamorous way, like sleeping in squats, like playing in Christiana in Copenhagen, like, you know, running from cops in Poland in 1999.
Yeah, like, a lot of good times.
Yeah, a lot of good times, but like full, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. I was going to say chaos, but I don't mean that in a negative way. Mm-hmm. It was nothing about it was there was nothing performative about it, even though it was all performance. It was like real, legitimate, genuine, intense passion. You know, like everybody that was there was doing this shit because they loved it. Everybody that was playing with you was playing because they loved it. Right? And when I first started DJing, that's how it was for me. But by the time I stopped, like I didn't even listen to music anymore. Like when I wasn't DJing, I never put music on. I listen to audiobooks or podcasts because when I listened to music, I was only listening to it to think about, to assess whether or not the songs I were hearing were functional tools for me to use in a club. I was never enjoying them. Like, there was no enjoyment. I was never actually like just letting the music wash over me, just listening to an album start to finish because I loved it. It was like, I was like, is there a break in here that I could play? Is there something out of here that I could use? Is there something in here I could do for some wordplay? Like, is there something, you know, it was always like tool. It was always tool based. I was relating to this. I was relating to this stuff in this very artificial fabricated manner. And my identity had become so tied up with being like cool guy DJ in Portland that, and the fact of the matter is, like, regardless of how I might appear here or on the internet, like, I'm exceptionally introverted. Like, I am one of my friends a couple weeks ago, who's known me for a very long time from Detroit, was like, you've liked quarantine, haven't you? And I was like, no. And he's like, yeah, you have. And I was like, no. And he's like, yeah, you have. And I was like, yeah, fine. Fuck it. I have. I like that people can't invite me places. It's awesome. Like, I don't have to make excuses for why I'm not coming over to your house.
You just read me like a book, man.
Yeah. But the, you know, so for years, I didn't realize this, but for years I was performing, you know, it was like, which is why, you know, I've been sober for almost 8 years. And, almost 8 years. And you know, for a long time I had to be absolutely wasted. I was still very good at DJing when I was totally hammered. I don't know how, but like, I had to be absolutely wasted because that was the only way I could, like, I could feel like I was participating in the party. Because otherwise I was like, oh, I'm the weird kid off in the corner who's playing the music and like, look at me, but don't look at me too close, but look at me, but don't really look at me. Like, take a picture of me, but don't tag me. Like, you know, look at me and applaud me, but please don't come into the DJ booth and talk to me. Like, it was this, you know, it was this like awkward back and forth of navigating that relationship. And like, now I record a mix every week. I usually post them on Mixcloud, but I literally just like go in my closet and I'll just be like, if I heard a song earlier that day that I was stoked on, that's the first song I play. And then from there I have no plan. I'm just like, let's just see what happens, you know. And it's the most fun. I have so much fun. And like, sometimes my wife dances in the bedroom a little bit, but like, that's it. Otherwise it's just like me and I'll throw it online, and if people listen to it, cool. If they don't, well, whatever. And like, and there's some purity to that for me. And like, I'm not saying that you can't have that in a club setting. I'm just saying for me, I realized that I had a fucked up relationship with DJing that ruined my relationship with music, which was one of my, you know, the greatest passions of my life. And now that I'm not doing it anymore, I'm actually like making music again, and not trying to be like, Could I get this? Could this be a banger? I'm just like making weird sounds because it's fun, you know. And like, that's it. Like, it's tight.
I'm gonna make this track a banger.
Yeah, you know, whatever. Anyway, sorry.
I can so totally relate to that, Doc. I mean, like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm an introvert myself, you know. So I'm like kind of happy about the whole quarantine thing. Don't have to connect with other people here, but. No, but as far as the relationship, I'll be honest. I have like a bad relationship with music nowadays. You know, it's like especially during like when I was like really like DJing nightclubs full time.
You're,
you know,
jaded, man.
We're all jaded, old man. No, but I was definitely on the ride home, man. I'm just listening to like either sports talk or like podcasts, and I'm not trying to listen to music all the times. Everything's like at the gigs, at the club. But yeah, that gave me, I burnt out, and I basically just like, you know, quit DJing clubs. I retired from it, you know. But that's what I want to ask everybody else, is like, have you experienced some sort of like burnout? Not to the full extent of like me quitting the whole scene, but you know, like some sort of like burnout, you know.
I definitely have. There's no question in my mind. I mean, I'll just to share quickly and briefly for me, there was a point when I first went full time and going all in on the mobile gigs. I do a lot of private events. And there was a year that I think I did like 64 or something like that in a calendar year. And I was like, this is ridiculous. And so I told myself I would never work that hard again. But then the following year, just by like the momentum that that year had carried, I was still in like the high 50s. And I was like, yo, I can't do this. I physically could not sustain that. And fortunately for me, I just kind of cleared everything from my life that did not have to do with DJing. But the hard part about that was my life was only DJing at that point. And that's what kind of led me to the same thing you were just saying right there, Gio, about disconnecting from music. It was like, Doc, you said it too. Like, I'm looking for a break.
The same thing too, like with the business side of it too. It's like, you know, cause like DJing, you know, in order for you to like really like progress, you got to show face and like the networking side. And for introverts, that's a hard shit to do, man. And I've had to deal with, you know, having to like really like suck it up and like try to, you know, do that. But at the end of the day, I hated that shit.
Well, let's do a quick show of hands. Who considers himself an introvert? Yeah, so an extrovert.
What's funny is
that. Who's extrovert? Put your hand up.
I'm introvert by choice of craft because I understand that my just say fuck everything.
I
can tell myself that. No, some people get all like, you know, they get cooped up for too long and they go stir crazy. Like stir crazy doesn't happen to me. You give me information, computer, our turntables.
There's a difference between being introverted and being comfortable alone. You know,
there's a such thing as not being introverted in all situations.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think most people probably exist on a spectrum yeah, somewhat. Like not 100% one way or the other, but the way a friend of mine put it once was like, if you go and hang out with people and they, whether you like them or not, if it drains your energy, then you're an introvert. Yeah. And if it pumps you up, then you're an extrovert. And that's how she explained it to me.
And Chris Bear, you just threw something in the chat, ambivert. Why don't you?
Yeah, that's what Kim's getting at, I think. And there's ways you can kind of what draws energy. It's not normally always a binary anymore, you know? Certain people can handle it in different situations. I'm like an ambivert. So like I look like an extrovert, but I draw a lot of my energy from still being alone. But there are times when like, well, we all were just talking about this when you're behind the turntables and that's all this energy is getting poured on you from a crowd. And you're just like, oh, I love it. It just feels like so good. You're like, and I love you too. And there's this like thing going on. That's not introversion. I don't know what that is.
I was going to say, I think this pandemic and the lockdowns in general kind of made a lot of people realize like more about themselves than they thought they even knew. Like personally, the first like month of being in lockdown, like I was loving it. Like I think I was on an episode with you guys and I was talking about, I was like, I feel great. Like, you know, I'm so much more healthy. Like I'm just like, it was, you know, 2, 3, 4 months into it, that's when that other part of you kicks in and you're like, damn, I've realized that I am an extrovert, you know, and I do feed off that and I do need that. Otherwise, like I was going stir crazy. Like I was depressed. Like it was just, I realized that about myself because of this, you know? And I think a lot of people have done a lot of self-reflection during this. And like I said, realizing stuff about themselves that they didn't know.
I got a question on that. So after all, like, let's suppose we have a magic wand and like, poof, like COVID's over. What would you do differently now that you know these things about yourself? What would you change?
Ooh, that's a good question. And maybe I am an ambivert, to be honest with you. Because with COVID happening right now, like if I'm out of the house, like it's solely for work. I do not hang out at any other parties if I'm not working. I'm not doing anything remotely like social unless it involves like work, and I love that. You know, you're right, like Gio was saying earlier, like there's a part of this business where you like have to show face and you have to network, and it's like a thing with DJing, you know, and I just found myself like, and maybe it's because I've just been doing it for so long in my city, and I don't have to do that anymore.
So
yeah, you know. And but I love that. Like,
you've been through it.
Yeah, I've been through it, and then I love that now that I'm not doing that. You know what I'm saying? So
it's a good change of pace.
Yeah, it sure is.
I think it was definitely an immediate change of pace, clearly. But yeah, you know, I took the time. I think right off the bat, I don't know what people did. I took the time to relax, dude. You know, like,
yeah,
I even when it came to battle, even though I'm stressing myself to freak out right now, but like even battling, as soon I was like, you know what, I'm taking a year off of battling. This is not like, I'm definitely not going to a physical battle, and that didn't happen. But then, you know, all this online stuff came, and you know, I get FOMO as well, you know. And I realized for me, like, let's be honest, you know, DMC, to be totally honest, I've said this right now, I did not plan on doing DMC. You guys know this. Up until 3 weeks ago, you guys were like, are you doing it?
Are you going to enter?
Nah. And you even, you know, we had that conversation. You were like, that's the most grown up thing, you know, you've said, Art, you know, like you're, you know, and I get it. But at the end of the day, I look at my, you know, back to the social media thing. Like, I look at my, I don't know, the people that follow what I do, and they're fans of the videos that I put out. And a lot of these people have come from these DMC videos that I put out. So I can't ever like discount or exclude the very people that make up the bulk of my followers. So if it means to get my ass in gear for a week to put a routine together, even though in my mind I might think I might not be, you know, the champion of one thing or another, I do it because, one, my mental and physical, I need to, my personal self, I need to be creative. And if I'm not creative some way or another, and to me, honestly, I'm lazy. That's the one way I've been creative for freaking over 15, 20 years now. That's all I know is, you know, playing with sounds and stuff. So sure, there are other things that I'm doing now, but you know, at the end of the day, I think it was a change of pace. And back to what you guys were saying, you know, you looked into yourself to see what you really wanted. And I knew I wanted to relax. I knew that much.
That's good.
Running around, like, you know, just the tail end of that. I also just came back from Thailand 2 weeks prior to the shutdown. Right, I was out there visiting family and working. You know, I was DJing too. So it was like, man, like, you know, just a lot of movement, you know? So by the time movement stopped and, you know, it was okay for me.
So I wanted to go back to the burnout question really quick, because I think there's two really, pivotal ways people deal with burnout. One is they get burned out on something and it shuts them down completely. And then other people get burned out on something, but they don't stop doing. They just add more to something else on top of everything. So it doesn't feel like you're so burned out doing something, which is what I like. What I like to do. Gio knows this from being my partner. You know, like, I'll throw hundreds of ideas at him all the time, and most of them will get like thrown to the back burner, but then there's one that sticks, you know. But it's like, that's, I like to continually just like throw stuff out onto the next thing. And like, so for me, when I started to get burned out on DJing, it wasn't to stop. I just found something. I just slept less, basically less sleep. And found another hobby that was like totally outside of DJing, so it felt like I was balancing my time.
That's because I wasn't being able, as an adult, you're willing to make, you know.
Well, it was when you, before two children too, then your kids come along and things completely change as a DJ with kids, you know. Then the hours and I think what I learned through coronavirus and this pandemic that has been the most eye-opening is spending time on the weekends with my family, which I've never had ever. And I've pretty much been working every weekend since I was 16 years old. And so to actually be, it felt awkward at first to have like all this free time, and you almost feel kind of guilty about it. And then when you're just cooling out with your kids all the time, it made me realize that being out of the club scene is such a gift, and I don't think I could play that game. That's it. takes up too much time. Cool. And now I need to replace that. It's not burnt out. It's, I need to actually, in a productive way, replace time with my kids and my family, as opposed to DJing for gigs that that money might not really be balancing and worth the time, you know? So for me now, my new rule is I don't play on the weekends for unless it's a minimum number. And it's like, basically I'm only doing private events and weddings and things that are of a worth the time for the money, chasing the job. That's not going to, you know, pull me away from my family. And that's like it's such a gift through all this.
They got to realize that, to take you away from the family. That's
really, yeah, it took a pandemic. It took a pandemic to make me be like, yo, this is kind of not the road I want to go. I still will DJ. I still love doing parties, but I'd rather do parties, not like the weekly grind.
I tell you what,
the big difference between like doing a party and like a night brunch, you know, something that you care about, an event, a one-off, and or just being in the hustle again of 4 or 5 nights a week up till 3 or 4 in the morning. It's just,
I think to add on to that too, like one of the things that I was doing, like when the lockdowns like first started and we were all like, everyone jumped on like streaming like immediately, and I was doing it too. I was like recording mixes and doing like live sessions of shit that I would never play in a club, you know, just getting really creative with it. Stuff that I wanted to play, just stuff that really fulfilled me. And I wasn't thinking about music so like mechanically, as Doc Adam put it. Just getting back to what I love about music and the specific types of sounds that I personally love, but just could never play out. And what ended up happening off of that is I recorded a mix, and it was like a lot of like future beats, like a lot of soulful stuff, R&B, house forward kind of music that I just don't get booked for ever. And I put a mix out, and this spot that I'm currently now doing on Fridays heard it, and they hired me for it. And now I have a gig that is just like super fulfilling to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like just really, really dope, cool, fun music that I would never ever have a chance to play before.
That's dope.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
That's definitely a plus of the lockdowns for sure for me.
Plus. But real quick, guys, you know, like Chris was saying, you know, you gotta, family is important, you gotta find time. But this episode, we're out of time. So that's gonna do it for us for part one of this episode. We went a little bit over time, but we had some great stuff there. We'll be back next week, Monday night, 9 p.m. East Coast time, with part two, along with the same group of people here, you know, we have here tonight. By the way, for everybody tuning in to our show on Twitch, please stay in the chat. We're going to pay it forward by supporting another DJ and rating their channel once our show goes off the air. So stay put. Stay for a little bit. But if you missed any of our episodes, you can watch our episodes, our past shows, on Facebook.com/BeatRefinery or YouTube.com/BeatRefinery. If you prefer to listen to the audio side of things, this episode will be uploaded this Thursday to Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you consume and listen to all things podcasts. So make sure to click like, comment, and subscribe to all of our different platforms, whichever you prefer. So from all of us, thanks again to everybody for tuning in. We have one more week until the big election. So make sure to rock the ballot and vote. Everybody vote.
Vote. Get that sticker. Yes.
Keep wearing a mask and spread some love. We'll see you guys next week. Everybody say peace.
Peace.